Do you think more U.S. troops should be sent to Afghanistan? How many and when?
Yes, I think we need more troops. I've been saying that for over a year now. And I think that we have to do it as quickly as possible, because it's been acknowledged by the commanders on the ground, the situation is getting worse.
What commander on the ground ever doesn't want more troops? That's not the point. They always want more troops. That's the nature of being a commander. But the fact of the matter is that both of these gentlemen are doing exactly what President Bush did. When it became convenient to not have to answer the tough questions, they punt to the commanders on the ground. They conveniently remove that commander-in-chief or decider hat that they like to use when it's convenient for them to do so, but when it's not, they very quietly raise the flag, the patriotic flag, and say, oh, it's the commanders on the ground. Fact of the matter is that we don't need, for our national security interests, more U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Neither of them has discussed exactly why that is necessary. What goal of vital importance to the U.S. national security is at stake that is not being met by not having significantly more troops on the ground in Afghanistan? If it has to do with shoring up the domestic Afghani situation, that's not the U.S. security, national security interests at stake. That may be something the Karzai wants or needs to shore himself up, but they gloss over that completely, and they are allowed, by the lack of proper follow-up questions by this moderator and by the American people, they're allowed to do that, and they shouldn't be.
Although, you know, under George Bush, with the support of Senator McCain, we've been giving them $10 billion over the last 7 years. They have not done what needs to be done to get rid of those safe havens. And until we do, Americans here at home are not going to be safe.
Afghanistan, Senator McCain.
First of all, I won't repeat the mistake that I regret enormously. And that is after we were able to help the Afghan freedom fighters and drive the Russians out of Afghanistan. We basically washed our hands of the region, and the result over time was the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and a lot of the difficulties we are facing today. So we can't ignore those lessons of history. Now, on this issue of aiding Pakistan, if you're going to aim a gun at somebody, George Shultz, our great Secretary of State, told me once, you better be prepared to pull the trigger. I'm not prepared at this time to cut off aid to Pakistan. So I'm not prepared to threaten it, as Senator Obama apparently wants to do, as he has said that he would have done now.
A legitimate question would be, what has all of those billions of dollars of aid gotten us? I mean, what is the U.S. national security interest goal that is being met, according to them, by these billions of dollars of aid that we're providing to Pakistan?
A president of Pakistan, Qadari, has got his hands full. And this area on the border is not been governed since the days of Alexander the Great. I've been to Waziristan. I can see how tough that terrain is. It's ruled by a handful of tribes. And yes, Senator Obama calls for more troops, but what he doesn't understand, it's got to be a new strategy, the same strategy that he condemned in Iraq. That's going to have to be employed in Afghanistan. And we're going to have...
In other words, a massive influx of U.S. troops into Afghanistan. I mean, because that's basically the strategy that they employed that McCain supports in Iraq. So in saying that what we need is massive influx of troops because that's what worked in Iraq, he's saying apparently that that's exactly what we need in Afghanistan. Wrong.
Operate with us in combating the Taliban and jihadist elements. So we've got a lot of work to do in Afghanistan, but I'm confident now that General Petraeus is in the new position of command that we will employ a strategy which not only means additional troops, and by the way, there have been 20,000 additional troops from 32,000 to 53,000, and there needs to be more. So it's not just the addition of troops that matters. It's a strategy that will succeed. And Pakistan is a very important element in this. And I know how to work with them. And I guarantee you, I would not publicly state that I'm going to attack them.
Nobody talked about attacking Pakistan. Here's what I said, and if John wants to disagree with this, he can let me know. That if the United States has Al-Qaeda, bin Laden, top-level lieutenants in our sights, and Pakistan is unable or unwilling to act, then we should take them out. Now, I think that's the right strategy. I think that's the right policy. And John, you're absolutely right that presidents have to be prudent in what they say. But you know, coming from you, who in the past have threatened extinction for North Korea and sung songs about bombing Iran, I don't know how credible that is. I think this is the right strategy. Now, Senator McCain is also right that it's difficult. This is not an easy situation. You've got cross-border attacks against U.S. troops, and we've got a choice.
Now, they haven't talked yet about the sort of bellicose attitude that Senator McCain has taken with regard to Russia, not just with regard to the conflict in Georgia, but also with regard to poking the finger in the Russians' eye with regard to missile systems in the Czech Republic and in Poland. It'll be very interesting to see if they get to that, because that, I think, also has to be looked at, which they probably won't, but I think it needs to be looked at in terms of what exactly is the foreign policy that Senator McCain would employ. And it seems to be one that would indeed make the Bush doctrine look like a peacenik solution. I mean, McCain really does seem to be aggressively looking for areas in which to start or foster conflict so that the U.S. can be involved. And that has some fairly significant repercussions. We're already seeing, for example, because of the bellicosity of the statements that, and some of the actions that we took over in Georgia just over the last couple of months, and with regard that I think are also directly related to the unnecessary moves to put missile systems in the Czech Republic and in Poland, we're already seeing the Russians sort of counter that by becoming a little bit more involved with regard to Chavez, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and in Cuba. And I doubt that anybody in Washington really thought through how Russia would respond to the overtures that we were making that were adverse to Russia's interests in these other areas.
What was necessary inside of Europe. I supported what we did in Kosovo. I supported it because ethnic cleansing and genocide was taking place there. And I have a record. And Somalia. I opposed that we should turn the force in Somalia from a peacekeeping force into a peacemaking force, which they were not capable of. So I have a record. I have a record of being involved in these national security issues, which involve the highest responsibility and the toughest decisions that any president can make, and that is to send our young men and women into harm's way. And I'll tell you, I had a town hall meeting in Wolfboro, New Hampshire, and a woman stood up and she said, "Senator McCain, I want you to do me the honor of wearing a bracelet with my son's name on it. He was 22 years old and he was killed in combat outside of Baghdad, Matthew Stanley, before Christmas last year." This was last August, a year ago. And I said, I will wear his bracelet with honor. And this was August, a year ago. And then she said, "But
was that August a year ago? Or last August a year ago? I mean, let's move on to something that really matters here and do away with, this sort of silliness that they always have this irresistible urge to try to get that stuff in. You know, I'd like to see a presidential candidate that sticks to the issues, that talks about specifics, that talks about real policies and real consequences for those policies, and forgets this stuff that pulls at the heartstrings. But then again, I've been accused even by my former Republican colleagues of being heartless.
Win this one, and we won't come home in defeat and dishonor, and probably have to go back if we fail.
Jim, let me just make a point. I've got a bracelet, too. she asked me, can you please make sure that another mother's not going through what I'm going through? No U.S. soldier ever dies in vain, because they are carrying out the missions of their commander-in-chief. And we honor all the service that they've provided. And our troops have performed brilliantly. The question is, for the next president, are we making good judgments about how to keep America safe, precisely because sending our military into battle is such an enormous step? And the point that I originally made is that we took our eye off Afghanistan. We took our eye off the folks who perpetrated 9/11. They are still sending out videotapes. And Senator McCain, nobody's talking about...
I mean, I think on that point, he's absolutely correct. I don't think that's, you know, can really be legitimately argued. Now, you know, that doesn't mean that I or we ought to buy into all of the other things that follow from what he's saying. But on that point, I think he's right on.
Well, through Afghanistan, you don't muddle through the Central Front on Terror, and you don't muddle through going after Bin Laden. You don't muddle through stamping out the Taliban. I think that is something that we have to take seriously, and when I'm president, I will.
You might think that with that kind of concern, that Senator Obama would have gone to Afghanistan, particularly given his responsibilities as the subcommittee chairman. And by the way, when I'm subcommittee chairman, we take up the issues under my subcommittee. But the important thing is, I visited Afghanistan, and I traveled to Waziristan, and I traveled to these...
Of course, if he had done that, McCain would be criticizing him for going on boondoggles. I mean, when you get involved in this sort of inside Washington nonsense, arguing over silly stuff like that, I think you lose the American people. I mean, that's beneath these guys. They ought to, you know, be held to a higher standard. And the moderator ought to get them back on track, but I don't think he will.
Then that will have a calamitous effect on Afghanistan and American national security interest in the region. Senator Obama doesn't seem to understand there's a connection between the two.
I have some good news and bad news for the two of you. You all are even on time, which is remarkable, considering we've been going at it.
It's a testimony to you, Jim.
Well, I don't know about that. But the bad news is that all my little five-minute things have run over. So anyhow, we'll adjust as we get there. But the amount of time is even. New lead question, and it goes 2 minutes to you, Senator McCain. What is your reading of the threat from Iran right now to the security of the United States?
My reading of the threat from Iran is that if Iran acquires nuclear weapons, it's an existential threat to the state of Israel, and it is a threat to the region, because the other countries in the region will feel a compelling requirement to acquire nuclear weapons as well. Now, we cannot allow a second Holocaust. Let's just make that very clear. But I have proposed for a long time, and I've had conversation with foreign leaders about forming a League of Democracies. Let's be clear.
A League of Democracies? Is that going to be like the League of Nations, perhaps? I don't know whether the senator is going to get to it, but of course, he certainly must be aware of the last NIE, or National Intelligence Estimate, which was done on Iran about a year ago, and they concluded, and this is the concerned judgment, collective judgment of all of our foreign intelligence agencies, not just one, but collectively all of them agreed with this, that Iran does not have an active program of developing nuclear weapons. Now, either that was wrong, or there's new information, but they're all going. He's going off on this tangent, presuming something that our own government's national intelligence, foreign intelligence agency said is not the case. It'd be very interesting to see if he's asked about that.
Putting the most lethal IEDs into Iraq, which are killing young Americans. There are special groups in Iran that are coming into Iraq and are being trained in Iran, and there is the Republican Guard in Iran, which Senator Kyle had an amendment in order to declare them a sponsor of terror. Senator Obama said that would be provocative. So this is a serious threat. This is a serious threat to security in the world. And I believe we can act, and we can act with our friends and allies and reduce that threat as quickly as possible. But have no doubt about the ultimate result of them acquiring nuclear weapons.
2 minutes on Iran.
And does that mean, and here again, they ought to be pressed on this, does that mean that he favors a military action, either direct or through surrogates, against Iran? I mean, that seems to be what he's implying, but he's not being pressed on it. I mean, and it seems to me that that's the direction that he's going in, which I believe would be extremely dangerous, if not foolhardy.
Several years has been the war in Iraq. Iraq was Iran's mortal enemy. That was cleared away. And what we've seen over the last several years is Iran's influence grow. They have funded Hezbollah. They have funded Hamas. They have gone from zero centrifuges to 4,000 centrifuges to develop a nuclear weapon. So obviously our policy over the last 8 years has not worked. Now, Senator McCain is absolutely right. We cannot tolerate a nuclear Iran. It would be a game changer. Not only would it threaten Israel, a country that is our stalwart ally, but it would also create an environment in which you could set up an arms race in the Middle East. Now, here's what we need to do. We do need tougher sanctions. I do not agree with Senator McCain that we're going to be able to execute.
Are we not already funding an arms race in the Middle East, and have we not been doing that for years? With the foreign military assistance and aid that we provide?
With Iran. But potentially have an interest in making sure Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. But we're also going to have to, I believe, engage in tough, direct diplomacy with Iran. And this is a major difference that I have with Senator McCain. This notion that by not talking to people, we are punishing them has not worked. It has not worked in Iran. It has not worked in North Korea. In each instance, our efforts at isolation have actually accelerated their efforts to get nuclear weapons. That will change when I'm President of the United States.
Senator, what about talking?
Well, Senator Obama twice said in debates that he would sit down with Ahmadinejad, Chavez, and Raul Castro without precondition. Without precondition. Now, here is Ahmadinejad. Who is now in New York talking about the extermination of the state of Israel, of wiping Israel off the map. And we're going to sit down without precondition across the table to legitimize and give a propaganda platform to a person that is espousing the extermination of the state of Israel, and therefore then giving them more credence in the world arena, and therefore saying they've probably been doing the right thing because you will sit down across the table.
I don't know that he ever took a course in philosophy, but that all does not logically follow from that. I mean, whether one agrees or disagrees with direct discussions with foreign leaders, even those in an adversarial relationship with us or not, all of those things don't follow simply from the premise that maybe we ought to communicate directly with this government. I mean, that to me is a gross distortion and a fallacy the way he's laid that out.
Now, Senator Obama said without precondition.
Let's talk about this. First of all, Ahmadinejad is not the most powerful person in Iran, so he may not be the right person to talk to. But I reserve the right, as President of the United States, to meet with anybody at a time and place of my choosing if I think it's going to keep America safe. And I'm glad that Senator McCain brought up the history, the bipartisan history, of us engaging in direct diplomacy. Senator McCain mentioned Henry Kissinger, who's one of his advisors, who, along with five recent secretaries of state, just said that we should meet with Iran, guess what, without precondition. This is one of your own advisors. Now, understand what this means without preconditions. It doesn't mean that you invite them over for tea one day. What it means is that we don't do what we...
Nor does it mean that you agree with them. which seems to be the premise of what Senator McCain was saying and providing as the basis for not talking with them.
Conditions and preparation. Of course we've got to do preparation, starting with low-level diplomatic talks. And it may not work because Iran is a rogue regime. But I will point out that I was called naive when I suggested that we need to look at...
What is the definition of a rogue regime? And I'm not quite sure I understand that. It'd be interesting to ask for the moderator to ask him, what does he mean by a rogue regime? A regime we don't agree with?
Then we have strengthened our ability to form alliances to impose the tough sanctions that Senator McCain just mentioned. And when we haven't done it, as in North Korea, let me just take one more example. In North Korea, we cut off talks. They're a member of the Axis of Evil. We can't deal with them. And you know what happened? They quadrupled their nuclear capacity. They tested a nuke. They tested missiles. They pulled out of the non-proliferation agreement. And they sent nuclear secrets potentially to countries like Syria. When we re-engage, because again, the Bush administration reversed course on this, then we have at least made some progress, although right now, because of the problems in North Korea, we are seeing it on shaky ground. And I just have to make this general point that the Bush administration, some Senator McCain's own advisors, all think this is important. And Senator McCain appears resistant. He even said the other day that he would not meet potentially with the Prime Minister of Spain. Because he wasn't sure whether they were aligned with us. I mean, Spain.
I think the problem was he wasn't sure that they were in the Western Hemisphere or not.
In terms of dealing with critical issues like terrorism.
I'm not going to set the White House visitor schedule before I'm President of the United States. I don't even have a seal yet. Dr. Kissinger did not say that he would approve of face-to-face meetings between the President of the United States and the President and Ahmadinejad. He did not say that.
Of course.
He said that there could be secretary-level and lower-level meetings. I've always encouraged them. The Iranians have met with Ambassador Crocker in Baghdad. Now, what Senator Obama doesn't seem to understand, that if without precondition you sit down across the table from someone who has called Israel a stinking corpse and wants to destroy that country and wipe it off the map, you legitimize those comments. This is dangerous. It isn't just naive.
I mean, this is ridiculously naive what he's saying. I mean, President Nixon met with Mao Zedong. And if you had gone back prior to that time and long after the meetings that they had in the early 1970s and looked at the rhetorical manner in which the regime in Beijing had characterized the United States, including words by Mao Zedong himself about obliterating the running dog capitalists in Washington and wiping the United States capitalist society off the face of the earth, then I guess you would be left in the very same situation that Senator McCain is in, and that is we shouldn't have dealt with China. We should not deal with any nation that says nasty things about us or an ally or anybody else. I mean, it is a ridiculously naive and simplistic and ultimately self-defeating manner of dealing with foreign relations if the senator really believes that, or perhaps he's just saying that for political purposes.
That we do not expect to solve every problem before we initiate talks. And, you know, the Bush administration has come to recognize that it hasn't worked, this notion that we are simply silent when it comes to our enemies. And the notion that we would sit with Ahmadinejad and not say anything while he's spewing his nonsense and his vile comments is ridiculous. Nobody's even talking about it.
So let me get this right. We sit down with Ahmadinejad and he says, we're going to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. And we say, no, you're not?
Yeah,
please. By the way, my friend Dr. Kissinger who's been my friend for 35 years, right, would be interested to hear this conversation and Senator Obama's conviction of his positions on the issue. I've known him for 35 years, and I guarantee he would not say that presidential top level. Of course, he encourages, and other people encourage contacts and negotiations and all other things. We do that all the time.
We're going to go to a new
league. Senator Obama is parsing words when he says precondition means preparation.
I am not parsing words. I'm using the same words that your advisors use. Please go.
New lead question. Russia goes to you. 2 minutes, Senator Obama. How do you see the relationship with Russia? Do you see him as a competitor? Do you see him as an enemy? Do you see him as a potential partner?
Well, I think that given what's happened over the last several weeks and months, our entire Russian approach has to be evaluated because a resurgent and very aggressive Russia is a threat to the peace and stability of the region. Their actions in Georgia were unacceptable. They were unwarranted. And at this point, it is absolutely critical for the next president to make clear that we have to follow through our six-point ceasefire. They have to remove themselves from South Ossetia and Abkhazia. It is absolutely important that we have a unified alliance and that we explain to the Russians that you cannot be a 21st century superpower or power and act like a 20th century dictatorship. And we also have to affirm all the fledgling democracies in that region, the Estonians, the Lithuanians, the Latvians, the Poles, the Czechs, that we are in fact going to be supportive and in solidarity with them in their efforts. They are members of NATO, and to countries like Georgia and the Ukraine, I think we have to insist that they are free to join NATO if they meet the requirements, and they should have a membership action plan immediately to start.
I mean, this is an area, I'm not sure that any of these folks have any idea what NATO is. It's already over 24, I think 26 nations belong to NATO. The NATO mission is different depending on who you talk to within the NATO organization. It means whatever any particular nation within NATO wants it to mean at any particular time with regard to whether or not you want to use it to further a particular policy. It is an organization that ought to be disbanded, not expanded. The Secretary General of NATO just the other day said that I guess he was speaking about in his view, but as the titular head of NATO, the purpose of NATO is to ensure a united and undivided Europe. I mean, what in the world does that mean? And yet, according to, I think it's Article 5 of NATO, An attack on any one of the nations, that is, one supposes, any effort by an outside power to divide Europe or to disunite Europe would be an attack and would therefore lead to the potential involvement, military perhaps, of all the other nations. And you have an organization that was set up over half a century ago in a very different world for a very different purpose. And rather than do away with it, and if there is a necessity, which I'm not sure at all that there is, for a replacement organization that reflects 21st century reality in Europe as opposed to 1940s reality in Europe, then do that. But this notion that we have to keep expanding it without really thinking through why we're expanding it or what we're doing, to me, makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Everything to do with energy. There's a pipeline that runs from the Caspian through Georgia through Turkey. And of course we know that the Russians control other sources of energy into Europe, which they have used from time to time. It's not accidental that the presidents of Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, Poland, and Ukraine flew to Georgia, flew to Tbilisi, where I have spent a significant amount of time with a great young president, Misha Saakashvili, and they showed solidarity with.
One might ask him, what makes this young president so great? He doesn't seem to be a rocket scientist, at least according to the way that he evaluated what Russia would clearly do in the light of what he did that was very provocative, to put it mildly. Perhaps the only reason that he is a great young leader is the fact that Senator McCain has looked at him, looked in his eyes, and determined that he has a soul of something. But this, again, you know, for all of the rhetoric that McCain keeps putting forward and patting himself on the back, for all of this vast, unparalleled knowledge of foreign affairs and experience that he has from spending apparently a great deal of time in all these countries, his view of how to deal with foreign leaders, while certainly, you know, light years ahead of his running mates, really appears to be very, very simplistic and actually dangerous. And this is one area where I think we can see that very clearly, almost gleefully getting us involved in a potential military confrontation with Russia in an area and for reasons that have nothing whatsoever directly or really even reasonably indirectly to do with U.S. national security.
Under the political process in Ukraine between Tymoshenko and Yushchenko is a very serious problem. So watch Ukraine, and let's make sure that we, that the Ukrainians understand that we are their friend and ally.
See, do you have a major difference with what he just said?
No, actually, I think Senator McCain and I agree for the most part on these issues. Obviously, I disagree with this notion that somehow we did not forcefully object to Russians going into Georgia. I immediately said that this was illegal and objectionable. And absolutely, I wanted a cessation of the violence because it put an enormous strain on Georgia. And that's why I was the first to say that we have to rebuild the Georgian economy and call for...
We have to rebuild the Georgian economy? I mean, we're already rebuilding Iraq's infrastructure. They want to rebuild Afghanistan's. We have an obligation to rebuild Georgia's economy? What world are these guys operating in? And yet, nobody really probes and questions them on this nonsense. That is absolute nonsense, what he just said. Neither the moderator or the majority of the American people either care enough about or understand the issues enough to call that nonsense for what it is.
The second point I want to make is the issue of energy. Russia is in part resurgent, and Putin is feeling powerful because of petrodollars, as Senator McCain mentioned. That means that we, as one of the biggest consumers of oil, 25% of the world's oil, have to have an energy strategy, not just to deal with Russia, but to deal with many of the rogue states we've talked about, Iran, Venezuela. And that means, yes, increasing domestic production and offshore drilling, but we only have 3% of the world's oil supplies, and we use 25% of the world's oil. So we can't simply drill our way out of the problem. What we're going to have to do is to approach it through alternative energy like solar and wind and biodiesel and, yes, nuclear energy, clean coal technology. And, you know, I've got a plan for us to make a significant investment over the next 10 years to do that.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Senator...
Quick programming note, if any of you have questions, please write them down on a piece of paper with your name and pass them around to people who will be collecting them. So I can ask them.
Against alternative energy like solar and wind and biodiesel. And so we've got to walk the walk and not just talk the talk when it comes to energy independence, because this is probably going to be just as vital for our economy and the pain that people are feeling at the pump and, you know, winter's coming and home heating oil, as it is our national security and the issue of climate change that's so important.
We've got time for one more lead question segment. We're way out of time. You could be a quick response.
No one from Arizona is against solar. And Senator Obama says he's for nuclear, but he's against reprocessing and he's against storing. So it's hard to get there from there.
I'm sorry.
And offshore drilling is also something that is very important, and it is a bridge. And we know that if we drill offshore and exploit a lot of these reserves, it will help at least temporarily relieve our energy requirements, and it will have, I think.
Yet here, I think it's important for the American people to know that Senator McCain is trying to play it both ways. He was against offshore Outer Continental Shelf drilling. And then he said he is for it, but if you look at the fine print, sort of the asterisk, according to what he says, he's not really. He's willing to allow for it in some circumstances if the states agree to it, but obviously not in certain other areas, such as off the eastern seaboard and in some areas even off the western coast of Florida. So hopefully they'll go into that issue in a little more detail in the next debate. He's clearly trying to play both sides of it and sort of skate across the Outer Continental Shelf drilling issue.
Another 9/11 attack on the continental United States.
I think it's much less than it was the day after 9/11. I think that we have a safer nation, but we are a long way from safe. And I want to tell you that one of the things I'm most proud of, among other, because I have worked across the aisle, I have a long record on that, on a long series of reforms. But after 9/11, Senator Joe Lieberman and I decided that we needed a commission. And that was a commission to investigate 9/11 and find out what happened and fix it. And we were opposed by the administration, another area where I differed with this administration. And we were stymied until the families of 9/11 came. And they descended on Washington, and we got that legislation passed. And there were a series of recommendations, as I recall, more than 40. And I'm happy to say that we've gotten written into law most of those reforms recommended by that commission. I'm proud of that work. Again, bipartisan, reaching across the aisle, working together, Democrat and Republican alike. So we have a long way to go in our intelligence services. We have to do a better job in human intelligence, and we've got to make sure that we have people who are trained interrogators so that we don't ever torture a prisoner ever again. We have to make sure that our technological and intelligence capabilities are better. We have to work more closely with our allies. I know our allies, and I can work much more closely with them. But I can tell you that I think America is safer today than it was in 9/11. But that doesn't mean that we don't have a long way to go. And I'd like to remind you also, as a result of those recommendations, we probably had the largest reorganization of government since we established the Defense Department. And I think that those men and women in those agencies are doing it.
Of course, what he really means with using the word reorganization is growth in government. What they did, for example, with regard to establishing the Directorate of National Intelligence is add more bureaucracy onto the existing foreign intelligence apparatus of our government. So it's not some great reorganization and streamlining of our government, but a growth and an addition to the bureaucracy. Plus the fact is, again, very interesting, he likes leave us with the impression that we have this great foreign intelligence apparatus and is doing such a great job. Well, if it is, why doesn't he believe the product of that great new intelligence apparatus, which gave us the NIE that says that Iran is not developing nuclear weapons?
Nuclear weapons. And we are spending billions of dollars on missile defense. And I actually believe that we need missile defense because of Iran and North Korea and the potential for them to obtain or to launch nuclear weapons. But I also believe that when we are only spending a few hundred million dollars on nuclear proliferation, then we're making a mistake. The other thing that we have to focus on, though, is Al-Qaeda.
What? We're spending a few hundred million dollars on nuclear proliferation? Does he mean anti-nuclear proliferation? I'm not sure what he's talking about there.
We are going to need more cooperation with our allies. And one last point I want to make. It is important for us to understand that the way we are perceived in the world is going to make a difference in terms of our capacity to get cooperation and root out terrorism. And one of the things that I intend to do as president is to restore America's standing in the world. We are less respected now than we were 8 years ago or even 4 years ago. And this is the greatest country on earth. But because of some of the mistakes that have been made, and I give Senator McCain great credit on the torture issue for having identified that as something that undermines our long-term security because of those things.
But again, he wound up actually supporting the Bush administration on it legislatively. So here again, McCain was playing both sides of the issue. I'm surprised that Obama's people didn't make him aware of that.
Obama said it had to be, quote, proven. That wasn't proven when Ronald Reagan said we would do SDI, which is missile defense. And it was a major factor in bringing about the end of the Cold War. We seem to come full circle again. Senator Obama still doesn't quite understand or doesn't get it, that if we fail in Iraq, it encourages al-Qaeda. They would establish a base in Iraq. The consequences of defeat, which would result from his plan of withdrawal and, according to date certain, regardless of conditions, according to our military leaders, according to every expert, would lead to possible defeat, loss of all the fragile sacrifice that we've made of American blood and treasure, which grieves us all. All of that would be lost if we followed Senator Obama's plan to have specific dates for withdrawal, regardless of conditions on the ground. And General Petraeus says, we have had great success, but it's very fragile, and we can't do what Senator Obama wants.
Yeah. What Senator McCain really ought to do is he ought to withdraw and have General Petraeus put forward as a nominee. I mean, he apparently thinks this guy walks on water, that everything he does is the correct way, and that he's going to be setting the policy for Senator McCain. Senator McCain ought to do the right thing, step aside, and let the man that he thinks is the very best person run as president in his stead.
That has been their priority. That has been where all our resources have gone. In the meantime, Bin Laden is still out there. He is not captured. He is not killed. Al-Qaeda is resurging. In the meantime, we've got challenges, for example, with China, where we are borrowing billions of dollars. They now hold $1 trillion worth of our debt. And they are active in countries like, in regions like Latin America and Asia and Africa. They are, the conspicuousness of their presence is only matched by our absence because we've been focused on Iraq. We have weakened our capacity to project power around the world because we have viewed everything through this single lens. Not to mention, look at our economy. We are now spending $10 billion or more every month. And that means we can't provide health care to people who need it. We can't invest in science and technology, which will determine whether or not we are going to be competitive in the long term. There has never been a country on earth.
Of course, it never enters his mind that if we stop spending that money in Iraq, we should just return it to the American people. All he's interested in is not spending the money in Iraq, but leaving it in the hands of the government to spend on all these other things.
All across the country who are trying to figure out, how can I get disability payments? I've got post-traumatic stress disorder, and yet I can't get treatment. So we have put all chips in, right, Ben? And nobody is talking about losing this war. What we're talking about is recognizing that the next president has to have a broader strategic vision about all the challenges that we face. That's been missing over the last 8 years. That sense is something that I want to restore.
I've been involved, as I mentioned to you before, in virtually every major national security challenge we faced in the last 20-some years. There are some advantages to experience and knowledge and judgment. And I honestly don't believe that Senator Obama has the knowledge or experience and has made the wrong judgments in a number of areas, including his initial reaction to Russian aggression in Georgia, to his, we've seen the stubbornness before in this administration to cling to a belief that somehow the surge has not succeeded, and failing to acknowledge that he was wrong about the surge shows to me that we need more flexibility in a president of the United States than that. As far as our other issues that he brought up are concerned, I know the veterans, I know them well, and I know that they know that I'll take care of them, and I've been proud of their support and their recognition of my service to the veterans, and I love them, and I'll take care of them, and they know that I'll take care of them, and that's going to be my job. But also, I have the ability and the knowledge and the background to make the right judgments to keep this country safe and secure. Reform, prosperity, and peace. These are major challenges to the United States of America. I don't think I need any on-the-job training. I'm ready to go at it right now.
Well, let me just make a closing point. And my father came from Kenya. That's where I get my name. And in the 60s...
Highly relevant, I suppose.
Here in the United States. Because the notion was that there was no other country on earth where you could make it if you tried. The ideals and the values of the United States inspired the entire world. I don't think any of us can say that our standing in the world now, the way children around the world look at the United States, is the same. And part of what we need to do, what the next president has to do, and this is part of our judgment, this is part of how we are going to keep America safe, is to send a message to the world that we are going to invest in issues like education. We are going to invest in issues that relate to how ordinary people are able to live out their dreams. And that is something that I'm going to be committed to as President of the United States.
3 seconds, we're almost finished.
Jim, when I came home from prison, I saw our veterans being very badly treated. And it made me sad. And I embarked on an effort to resolve the POW-MIA issue, which we did in a bipartisan fashion. And then I worked on normalization of relations between our two countries so that our veterans could come all the way home. I guarantee you, as President of the United States, I know how to heal the wounds of war, I know how to deal with our adversaries, and I know how to deal with our friends.
And that ends this debate tonight. On October 2nd, next Thursday, also at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, the two vice presidential candidates will debate at Washington University in St. Louis. My PBS colleague, Gwen Ifill, will be the moderator. For now, from Oxford, Mississippi, thank you, Senators both. I'm Jim Lehrer. Thank you, and good night.
A round of applause, please, for...
Thank you. Thank Reason for putting this event together. It took a lot of work and resources, and I appreciate it very, very much. And I'm sure that not just everybody here does, but all of those listening through the electronic media. Obviously, it would have been even better had I been invited, as I should have been, to the debate itself. And that is something that illustrates the bankruptcy of the current two-party system, the hubris, the arrogance, if you will, the audacity, as Senator Obama would say, of the two parties gaming the system so that any viewpoint, any opportunity to have a different viewpoint or a different perspective presented is absolutely unacceptable to them. And I think it would behoove all of us on behalf of the American people, most of whom actually believe in a more open, robust debate, 55% according to a recent Zogby poll, believe that that Bob Barr's Libertarian nominee should have been invited to the debate. I think that it would behoove all of us to make that view known to not just the Commission on Presidential Debate, but the national media as well, which are complicit in closing off this system just to the two status quo parties.
Is there a place where the U.S. should be fighting al-Qaeda in a foreign country? If so, where? If not, why not?
Well, we should be fighting anybody who attacks us, whether it's al-Qaeda or if there's another terrorist group out there. If they take action against us, and clearly al-Qaeda did on 9/11 and in other instances around the world, we ought to go after them. I do not believe that it is at all inappropriate for military purposes to take action against those who have or have the capability and are imminently poised to take action against us.
Question from a German journalist friend is, what should be done from the U.S. president's point of view about Iran?
What we ought to do is we ought not to be so limited in our view, so constrained in our view of both that region of the world and with regard to Iran, that we do not take advantage of a number of factors that lend themselves to a very long-term constructive relationship with the country and the people of Iran. The people in the country of Iran have a very strong pro-Western view of the world. They have a very free market view of the world. They have a very robust economy that could, of course, be much more robust if the country were opened up and the market forces allowed to flourish, which under the current leadership, it is very constrained. But given all of that, given our prior history of a very good relationship with Iran, given the type of country that it is, the economy, the political structure, unlike Iraq, Iran has a history of participatory government. It is a very homogeneous population, very well-educated population, very diverse economy. All of those things lend themselves to a productive relationship with us, and we ought to be exploring ways to develop that, not constantly look for reasons not to. There are ways that we can approach it directly through negotiations. You don't all of a sudden jump over all of the intermediary steps and immediately say, oh, let's sit down with the leader. But there are some very specific intermediary steps that we can begin. We ought to begin. We can also approach this at the same time through our allies, such as Germany, for example, that have robust economic and political diplomatic relations with Iran. Part of the problem that I think Senator Obama correctly points out is, in many respects, our relations with a number of so many countries around the world have cooled as a result of the, you know, these manifestations of the so-called Bush Doctrine. That we no longer have the capability to use the good offices of our allied nations to assist us better develop relations with other countries, including Iran.
You mentioned the Bush Doctrine. What would a Bob Barr Doctrine look like?
The Bob Barr Doctrine would look very different. As a matter of fact, it would have nothing at all in common with the Bush Doctrine. The Barr Doctrine would be a constitutional doctrine. It would truly put the emphasis on defense in national defense policy. We would continue to maintain, as we do currently, the best, the strongest, the most technologically advanced military on the face of the earth. We need that. We should continue to employ our military to protect our nation, our sovereignty, as well as to protect whatever facilities and personnel we have stationed around the world. Insofar as we never know from day to day where the next crisis might crop up, where the next attack on U.S. facilities, U.S. personnel might come from, it is important to maintain landing rights agreements with a whole range of countries, to maintain overflight agreements with as many countries as possible, to maintain port facilities in key areas around the world in all of the navigable oceans of the world, so that when a problem does crop up, we have the ability to project our force where necessary and when necessary. But it does not mean occupying foreign nations. It does not mean preemptively striking at a foreign nation. It means also relying on good and demanding good, sound foreign intelligence and actually listening to and acting on that foreign intelligence that that we do have the capability of developing, yet we have allowed to fall into disrepair through politicizing our foreign intelligence apparatus in recent years.
You're against the bailout. What should the federal government do about the economic crisis instead, if anything?
There are a number of things that the federal government ought to do. One is start prosecuting. The fact that we have by various estimates, hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars of bad paper floating around out there, which has been propped up and allowed to recirculate time and again through the U.S. economy by virtue as a direct result of federal policies designed to artificially push home ownership, clearly indicates to me that there is fraud involved. Yet we have not seen any prosecutions. The word is that there are a number of active investigations in several U.S. attorney's offices around the country But the fact of the matter is, there have been no overt investigations, much less prosecutions. That needs to have a much higher priority. I think what we ought to be doing is looking at creating more transparency in the laws and regulations, not more regulation, not more government control. There are a number of tools that are available also to the government, such as taking institutions that are failing and placing them into receivership, use of the bankruptcy laws, Chapter 7, to liquidate some of these failed institutions, to at least get something on the dollar in return for selling off their assets, as opposed to simply pumping $1 trillion of U.S. taxpayer money into doing exactly the same thing that got us into the problem in the first place, and that is buying up mortgage-based securities with no value.
You had a very public sort of falling out or miscommunication with Ron Paul last week, I think it was, and he ended up endorsing Chuck Baldwin. There are press conferences. Briefly, what went wrong, and what would you say to those out there who were Paul supporters who were disappointed in your behavior during that process?
Well, what they ought to be is disappointed in Ron Paul's behavior. Endorsing the theocratic candidate, that is Chuck Baldwin, whose party platform bears very little relationship to the true libertarian platform, makes no sense whatsoever. What we are trying to do through my nomination and candidacy as a libertarian nominee is what we would have hoped Ron Paul would have done, and that is to provide true, focused leadership for the libertarian movement. Instead, what Congressman Paul did a couple of weeks ago was to hold a news conference as a sitting Republican member of Congress, who by all accounts intends to remain a Republican member of Congress, and invite four very divergent candidates, the Constitution candidate, the Green Party candidate, an independent candidate, and the Libertarian candidate, and present those as sort of a godfather to the American people and say, you have four candidates here who stand for very, very different messages. Vote for one of them. That's not leadership. That's not moving the libertarian agenda, which Ron Paul used to espouse and do so very eloquently, forward.